Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Agent Chat Live. Agent Chat Live is a spinoff of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about both shows, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast supporters, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second Agent Chat Live. I see we have some regulars here, some new people, so welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, my guest, yeah, Lodestar, I got it. They added this countdown to the StreamYard chat, so I figured I'd try it and see if it helped, because I know there's like a little bit of delay from when I start to when people can start interacting. So, yeah, welcome, welcome. Hey, Ebony. Hey, Heather. Hey, Pubbers. All right. So today my guest is Chelsea Hensley. Chelsea is an associate agent at KT Literary and is actively building her client list. She's looking for middle grade, young adult, and select adult fiction. Before joining KT Literary, Chelsea was a perpetual publishing intern and tried out a variety of career paths in publishing before deciding on agenting. She previously worked for a literary journal, an academic press, a literary agent, and most recently for Page Street Publishing. So please welcome Chelsea.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. I'm like reading the comments. See if people like the countdown. Cool. Okay. So let me check my audio settings because I'm getting a little bit of an echo right now. Okay. They look good. And okay, cool. For a second, I thought I had closed it again, which I did earlier before when we were getting ready. Okay, so this is kind of a new show. This is the second episode. So thanks for coming on. I'm sure it will kind of mutate and adapt over time, but my goal is to help potential clients get to know you a little bit better. So viewers are welcome to drop questions in the comments, but I did want to say up front that I won't really be asking questions that a Google search or any agent can answer. And things like word count and genre definitions and that kind of thing. And I also won't be asking any, like, what I like to call pre-queries when people are like, would you be interested in, you know, a mermaid book or whatever? Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and just get started with what categories and genres you represent.
All right. So I'm looking for middle grade, young adult, and select adult. For adult, I'm only looking for fantasy, some supernatural horror. For YA, I am looking to represent across all genres, but particularly I'm interested in fantasy, but I would love, 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 and I have not gotten a lot yet, some YA mysteries and thrillers. I love them. I am from the Courtney Summers School of Mysteries and Thrillers, and I would love some more of those. I am a very hard sell on YA contemporary, though, just keep in mind. And with middle grade, I'm particularly interested in fantasy, especially like retellings of myth, legends, retellings in general I'm really into. So, yeah.
Awesome. A lot of people saying hello to you. Lodestar, Katie, Heather,
hello.
Ebony, and Jessica. So you might have seen in the comments someone said, hey, Pubbers. That's from my regular show, Pub Talk Live. The regulars named themselves Pubbers. So if you see that, that's what they're referring to. Yeah. So if you are a Pubber, welcome. If you're not a Pubber, hopefully you'll join us.
That's so fancy, right. Sarah.
It happened during a show. And I was like, I was having a conversation. I was interviewing someone and it happened during the show. And I saw in the comments, I was like, is that what did y'all just name yourself? I was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. So we're going to do a quick round just to kind of like loosen us up, get us ready. So I will say this first question, a little bit lead up to it, when I was trying to decide what to call the show, we were, one of the Patreon supporters suggested Snack Time with an Agent, which I really liked, like kind of the feel of, but I also didn't want to imply that it was only for like kidlit stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't go with it, but it did inspire this question. So for the quick round, if you could try to answer in like 5 seconds or less, these are like fast.
Okay.
I know. No pressure. All right. What is your favorite snack?
Chocolate chip cookies.
What word do you irrationally hate?
Moist. Ew. Am I saying it?
What person do you most want to read a memoir from?
Ooh. I'll say Beyonce because I'm nosy.
Good one. And who is your favorite fictional witch?
Bonnie Bennett from The Vampire Diaries. I like her, not her show.
Oh.
But she was great. Not her show. But yes.
Cool. So I had asked my Patreon supporters if they had questions for you. If they support at $5 a month or more, they get to submit questions ahead of time for all of my shows. And the favorite witch was actually a question from a Patreon supporter, but I decided it worked better in the short answer one. But I do have a question from Jalen. Jalen asks, what is your personal strategy for working with authors prior to and during the submission process? So I guess just kind of like talk us through what you think that agent-author relationship will look like after you sign someone.
Yeah, so first off, I am an editorial agent. So I do revise and edit with clients. That said, I don't like to do it, you know, needlessly. If I think something is ready, it's ready. I don't like to just edit for the sake of putting my fingers in something. So that would be part of the conversation that we have, especially for a new client, that would be part of the conversation. For one that I've had, it'd be a little different because we probably have been having conversations about it in the conception stage, in the drafting stage. So it wouldn't necessarily be that same reading the whole thing, giving notes, sending it back to mm-hmm. It'd be like a little tweaked. But yeah, in general, I picture a client agent relationship being very collaborative, very much a conversation all the time. My clients will probably hear from me pretty regularly just for me to say hello and check in and make sure, you know, all is well. Once we're on submission, then it becomes so do you want to work on something else now, or do you want to, you know, sit and breathe? Either way, that's good for me. If you're working on something, then it'll be what are you working on? What can I do to help you? Et cetera, et cetera. And when you're done, what do we want it to look like? All that good stuff. But yeah, same deal. Talking all the time. Submission strategy is also a thing I talk about with clients as far as where it's going to go, who's it going to go to, who is it not going to go to? If it doesn't go to somebody, if it doesn't go anywhere, what do you want to do? What are we going to do? So yeah, it's very much a back and forth dialogue, a partnership. Yeah.
Cool. Jay has a related question in the comments. You were a Pitch Wars mentor previously, which I know, so I'm not going to ask you to confirm. Is your editorial help like being a mentor in that?
Yeah, it's very similar. My editorial style is pretty... So editorially, I like to... In general, I would say most editors would say this. Some will disagree. None of my editorial notes are a mandatory must do. If you don't do this, we're not going to take it wherever. We're not going to do that. That's not what editorial looks like for me. It's similar to what I said before. It's definitely a conversation. If I notice a weak point in a manuscript, I'll point it out. And I like to offer lots of suggestions, ask lots of questions, and say, well, what does that mean for this? How does this character respond to that? And those questions are not necessarily to say, those questions and suggestions aren't necessarily to say you have to do this the way that I'm suggesting. It's just to get you thinking about a way to put the answers on the page. Mm-hmm. It's more of a me trying to draw out of a writer what they kind of already have and just haven't put down. It's more of a, the writer knows the book better than anybody, because, you know, you have all those things that you didn't put in there that you were thinking about putting in there and were like, mm-hmm. oh, never mind. And might turn out that that is something you absolutely need, but I don't know what that thing is because I don't live in your brain. So my goal is to pull that out of you and to help you put it where it needs to be. But if you see a better way to do that, if I suggest one way and you're like, I don't like that. What if I did it this way? Great. Like, the path there doesn't have to be the same one. As long as we end up at the destination of a great book, that's fine with me. So that is how I kind of approached Pitch Wars. So yeah, it's pretty similar.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's great, because I hear a lot of newer writers are worried that if they go, you know, the traditional route, there's this idea that someone's going to make them make a change they don't want to make, or it's going to change the book and it's not going to be theirs anymore.
Yeah.
And like, I've had four editors and one agent, and that's never been the case for me. So
yeah, like, you'd be surprised how many things don't get changed.
When, yeah.
Like, some might say, I don't know about this. It's just in there anyway. Like, yeah. It's not a super hard and fast, like, has to go or else. It's,
yeah. And also, every time I get an edit letter, this has happened every single time I get the edit letter, I read it and I'm like, they don't know what they're talking about. This is, you know, blah blah blah. And then I like wait a day and read it again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I can try that. Like, let's try it and see how it works. And then, you know, I'm in the process. I'm like, hey, this is actually going pretty well. And by the end of it, I'm like, oh, this, my editor's a genius. They're so smart.
That's the ideal response. Sometimes first getting it is really, like, first getting an edit letter can be really kind of shocking. And like,
yeah.
Like, even if you know that your book's not perfect, seeing it all like in like word format, pages upon pages, it's almost like a shock to the system. You're like, oh, now I have to do this. And yeah, so you need to take a moment to collect yourself.
Well, I think part of it is because it is another person, and I think this is the benefit, right? Is they see things that you would have never thought of, and that's like such a surprise to you that you're like, well, they could come back and say this and this and this, and then they don't. They say that and that and that. And so it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because there's things in there you've never even thought about. And when another person gets their eyes on it, you know, everybody brings their own stuff into reading anything. Mm-hmm. That's how you get a bunch of stuff with people coming up with headcanons for things that you that authors are like, oh, I never. Yeah.
I know.
But yeah, it's right there. So
yeah, when people are like, oh, I love how you tied these two things together, I was like, yep,
me too.
Did that on purpose. All right, so another question from patron supporter Lodestar asked, in your dream scenario, you would love to hear a book you represent be the next big blank.
I would.
Courtney Summers.
That was my first thought. I just read The Project. I read an arc of The Project, which is Courtney Summers' newest book. Like, I love her. And yeah, I would love to represent something akin to that, where it's just your head exploding. I would love it. Of course, every agent would love to represent, you know, the next big thing. I don't think there's too many agents who would say no. But yeah, I would love, that's my first thought. Yeah, I would love to get the next great YA thriller, mystery, dark, wonderful book.
All right. So I'm going to give you a chance to brag about yourself. So please take full advantage of it. Okay. I say that because people in publishing are often, you know, I feel too modest. So please brag about yourself as much as possible. If someone is thinking about querying you and your wish list lines up with their work, why should someone query you?
Oh yeah. Now I'm feeling really modest.
No, don't. Be modest.
You should query me because I'm fantastic. And I really like to be, I'm a person who likes to know everything. And I also like to make sure everybody else knows everything. So if you are a person who is very, what's the word I'm looking for? Who's very, we'll say interested in publishing and knowing what's what in your career, I am probably the person for you. I love explaining things to people. I love making sure that everybody knows A, B, C, and D, and to ask me about it later. I love that. Love talking about all of those. I'm also a really great editorial agent. When I was first thinking about getting into publishing, my first instinct was editorial. So I've been trained pretty thoroughly as an editor. And I'm great at it. So if you are a person who likes talking out things, who enjoys that kind of editorial back and forth, it's not for everybody. Some people know they don't like too much of that, which is also cool. But if you are a person who likes to be able to send something to your agent and say, what do you think? How can I make this better? I am the person for you.
Awesome.
Is there something else I want to say? I don't know.
You worked at Page Street, right? Did you work under Ashley?
Yes, I was with Ashley. I love Ashley.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Ashley's great. Ashley is actually going to be on the next episode of Pub Talk Live on Saturday. Oh. She's my special guest. Yeah, so.
Okay, I'm going to have to. I love Ashley. Ashley was so great and is a large part of the reason that, like, I've gotten so good editorially, because at Page Street in general, and if anybody's like interested in like interning anywhere at all, Page Street was so great because they took all of us so seriously. And it was like, because, you know, sometimes you get an internship and it's like, oh, you're the intern, you know. But Ashley and Lauren were both just very much like, we want to know what you guys think. We want to make sure that we're giving you guys opportunities to actually work on things that are going out into the world. Because sometimes as an intern, you get a lot of stuff that's just like, I don't want to say busy work, but sometimes it can feel that way because it doesn't lead to anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was always so much fun to get, when a Patreon book would come out that I had helped on, and then you flip to the back and you see your name and the acknowledgments and you're like, I did that. So yeah.
Yeah. I definitely had an editorial internship where I just read slush for 2 years and never advanced beyond that. And I was like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, I checked this box.
Lodestar wants to know what kind of glasses you're wearing.
Oh my god, these glasses are so old. They're horrible now, but they're Ray-Bans.
Okay.
I love them, but I've had them for a million years and need new ones. But they are great. I love this shape. But yeah, they're Ray-Bans.
I get my glasses from Zenni. I have 12 pairs of glasses. It's like...
I want that, Sarah. I want
a glass. Get it. I'll send you a referral link, too. You get $10 off.
Okay, yeah. Let's do it. I can't go to my doctor right now because I don't want to catch anything. So I'm not doing it.
I love it. It's like my only vanity. Like, I don't care about shoes or clothes or anything, but like, I love my glasses. Yeah.
I want that for myself.
So I'm going to ask a question that I usually hear asked a little bit differently, and I'm intentionally asking it a certain way. Because what you usually hear in these interviews is like, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about publishing, what it would be, right? But then I feel like those conversations aren't necessarily helpful because we don't have a magic wand. So realistically, if you could change one thing about publishing industry, what do you think you would change?
Just one thing?
Sure. Okay. I mean, if you have more, feel free to keep going.
Well, probably my big thing, and this is it's an industry side type of thing. I would have it pay more, like pay everybody more. Well, not everybody. The people who need to be paid more.
Yeah.
Because yeah, that's kind of how I ended up here at KT Literary, because I couldn't afford to move to New York on the pay that I was going to get, mm-hmm. and the pay that I get now is not going to happen. And so in a lot of ways, ending up at KT Literary was perfect for me, because I considered agenting, but then, you know, you had to figure out a way to get into an agency, and it's a whole other kerfluffle. But agenting you can do from anywhere. Like, I'm doing this from St. Louis, which is super helpful because it doesn't cost $1 billion to live here. And yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I would do is increase wages. I think that would solve a lot of publishing's problems, though not all of them, but it would certainly help.
Yeah, for sure. I've looked at jobs as well, and like, you see these jobs that are in New York City, where you have to live in New York City and be in New York City, and they're paying $30,000. And like, if you just think about it realistically, like if you get just a not great apartment on your own, barring roommates, assuming you don't know anyone in New York City, you're not going to have a roommate, right? It's going to be $2,000 a month. That's already $24,000. So you have $6,000, but not even, because you have to pay taxes. So like, it's literally not possible. And then
you have to like pay to stay alive. So
yeah,
it's not happening. And when I was still flirting with the idea of figuring out a way to go to New York, everyone was like, oh yeah, you'll just have some in an apartment with like five other girls. And I was like, like I did the roommate thing in college. I did it. It was fine. Shout out to Rachel and Kenny. They were great. But that was two people in a house. I had my own bathroom. I'm just too high maintenance for that.
I've honestly thought about it a lot, and I'm low maintenance, but I'm also a minimalist, and I also have OCPD, which is like it's a personality disorder instead of anxiety disorder, like OCD, and I can't handle clutter. So if I could find other minimalists to live with, then that would be fine.
but then you still have the thing where if there's multiple people, that's still just more stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just but
it's definitely a problem, and it prevents a lot of people from going into publishing who don't either have a partner who earns enough money to support them, or family support, or people who grew up in New York City, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why you find kind of a homogenous group of publishing people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I said I wasn't going to ask you advice, but I need to ask at least one advice question, because that's what people want, right? So what is your single best query letter tip?
My single best query letter tip would be to be as specific as you can be about your book.
Good one.
You sometimes you just see things where it's very generic, like so-and-so goes to save the world. And it's like, that's fine. I'm glad the world is being saved. But like, what specifically makes your book different than this other saving the world book? And I think some of that is just, I think query letter writing just takes practice, and you have to just do it over and over again. And then somehow you'll just stumble upon the perfect query letter. But that's probably the most common thing I see. And it's not necessarily like a, it's not necessarily like, you know, it's not going into the trash then if it's not, because I also read pages, but it really, really helps to have a really tight, specific query.
Yeah.
Since that's, you know, first impressions and all that. But yeah, be more specific.
Yeah. Well, it helps you get excited about it too. If something's specific, you're more likely to be excited to read those pages. So you're going in it with an idea of like, I hope I like this, you know?
Yeah.
Ebony, can't stand clutter either. Ebony, we should move to New York City together. Oh yeah. The queries where it's like, nothing will ever be the same again. I'm like, what does that mean? Yeah. Like, does that mean blue isn't going to be blue anymore? It's going to be pink, because I don't care. Or is it like, you know, worldwide suffering and destruction? That's like,
yeah.
Tell me more about that. Yeah. Let's see. Beth suggested this question earlier when I was like, I don't know if I have enough questions. And I just thought it was fun. So what is a good literary name for a cat or dog?
Ooh. Mr. Darcy. Probably better for a cat. Yeah.
Probably
better for a cat. But yeah, Mr. Darcy would be a good one. Anything, any of the Jane Austen characters would be great for a cat.
Yeah.
Someone should get on that. I'm sure somebody did.
I'm sure someone
has a cat named Mr. Darcy somewhere in the world. I'm sure.
My dog actually has a literary name. Most people don't get it right away. So I'm going to see if you can get, my dog is named Jasper.
Is it Twilight Jasper?
When I adopted him, my sister lived with me and we had both just read Twilight. Mm-hmm. And, well, not just, but like recently. And we actually were going to call him Cullen. And like, we literally had him home for like a day, calling him Cullen. And it just was weird. Like, it didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really like respond to it at all, which is weird to say, but he didn't. And then the first time I called him Jasper, he like looked at me and I was like, oh, that's it. So yeah.
Jasper is like a really good name. I remember when I read Twilight, I had a whole thing where I just became obsessed with the name. I really like the name Rosalie. I love that name. But Jasper was definitely, it just has a nice, it feels nice in your mouth. Jasper.
Yeah. And then I realized, like, I didn't realize this for like months later, and that in the shelter, they had a name for him that I hated. I wasn't going to call him that. But it was Chester. And so I was like, is that why he responded to Jasper?
Because my dog does that. She like responds to certain sounds more than she does to, because my mom, when she's talking to me and talking to, if she says my name or something similar to my name, my dog goes looking for me. And it's the sound thing.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, or if I like call my mom, the dog knows who I'm talking about. So yeah, I love animals. God, I love dogs. Mm-hmm. You don't deserve them, Sarah.
I know. And well, so now obviously my dog is a lot older and he's lost most of his hearing, but he can hear if you use like harsh sounds, like sharp sounds, like snaps or claps or something like that. But it turns out well because Jasper has a really harsh sound if you yell it, you know? So it's better than Cullen. Looks like a lot of people guess it was from Twilight, so that's cool. Jang had a question for you. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, what's the best time of year to query?
Well, first of all, you can always query when somebody is open to queries. That is always the best time to query.
Yeah.
You do have people who send and people are closed. Don't do that because it will not get read. In general, I say avoid like holidays and things like that, just because I guess it depends on when you want to get your answer. If an agent is open to queries, you can send it, I say.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to wait longer depending on where you're at in a certain time period, you know, holidays, people are not doing a lot of reading. But in that case, I always think, well, you should just close the queries. But some people don't do that. Same with like the summer. Now it's kind of weird because people aren't really doing vacation.
Yeah, the calendar's all thrown off. Yeah.
Yeah. This year is a complete wash. So I'd say also summer can be a little tricky just because people are doing a bunch of other stuff, going on vacations, visiting people, you know. But yeah, I would say in general, if an agent that you want to query is open, send it. And if it takes a while to hear back, it could take a while to hear back anyway. So
yeah,
follow your bliss.
I will say, so like for Pitch Wars, we survey the agents every now and then to ask them, you know, what month would be the best time for the showcase, which is why it moved 3 years ago to February. But every time we would do that, you know, there would be like a pretty clear consensus, like February has been good for a while. But then you get these emails from agents that are like, February is a terrible month for me. I don't know. Like, can you move it to another month? Blah, blah. So I think it differs too, depending on the person, you know?
Because there's that period of the holidays where everything shuts down. And then you come, once everybody's back in January, things start chugging along again. Once you get into spring, I think people start getting into the, oh, we're moving into summer. We're not doing anything then. So spring. And yeah. So, but like COVID has really just thrown everything. So yeah. Now there really is no good time to do anything. So you might as well just do it. Like there's no, everyone's just doing the best they can. So
like, we're all just waiting on that again.
Send it, sir.
I'm not sure, Katie, exactly what Katie means here, but has quarantine made it easier or more difficult to keep going in the book world?
I think it kind of depends. I think in the very beginning, everyone was really like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And so now that people are sort of settled into this is what it's going to be like for a while, things are starting to get more back to normal. But I say normal in that I mean people are kind of working this.
Yeah.
People are working again, though nobody's really working normally because everybody's working from home. You're doing everything differently than you were doing it before. If you have kids, your kids are there. It's a whole thing. In some ways, I don't think it's made it harder just because now you have to figure out how to navigate in this weird time that you don't know. If you're not used to working from home, which I kind of am because that's how I did all my internships, how I do all my like side hustles, I do them from home. So I'm kind of accustomed to that. But if you're not used to it, it's probably just like super. Ugh. And yeah, I think people are starting to figure it out now, but we'll see what happens in the fall. Especially, you know, if you have kids, it's just like, right now, super stressful. Fall is going to be super stressful. So
schools can't figure out what they're doing.
Yeah, seriously. I'm very relieved not to have children at this point, because I would just be out of my mind losing it. Like, oh my God, the school thing alone would just be driving me.
Yeah.
Ugh. It stresses me out just like seeing this. Like, my high school, I think, is pretty, I'm pretty sure my high school is going to go back in the fall. And I'm just like,
yeah. The school that opened in Indiana, did you see the news article?
Oh, yeah, it closed
hours. The first later. Day. Yeah. The first day.
Yeah. It's like, what are we? I'm just like, yeah, eventually there people are going to figure out this is not a great idea. Mm-hmm. But it's like, in the meantime, and there's just no good solution for like working parents right now, which is also.
Yeah. I will say for me, so like I've always done, like, I have a day job of like a regular, well, it's not a 9-to-5 because I'm an event planner, but 40 hours a week, you know? And then I also have always had kind of like the side things like writing and, you know, the different internships I've had and writing for Book Riot and stuff. And so I'm used to doing that work from home. But what's changed for me is now I have to do my day job work from home. And there's no transition of either space or location or anything. It's all happening in the same chair, in the same place. And so that's definitely made it harder for me to like focus, because it's like I just worked 8 hours and now I'm just going to have to sit here in the same spot and do more work, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I still, like, I work at a bookstore. That's my day job. So I still go in every day, which is an event. And I've gotten really, in general, working retail right now is not great. Retail is never great, which I think we all kind of know, but yeah. Now it's really not great. So because before all my side hustles were side hustles, I did them now I find myself doing them more and more and more, because I'm like, I don't really want to be doing this.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has given me a lot of reason to get, because I've been sort of, I'm kind of a chaos organizer kind of person. I can kind of keep everything together in my head, jot me down a piece of paper. Now I'm like, oh, I need to have my planner open, everything mm-hmm. down to the hour. So that's nice. My planner is getting a lot of use now in this last month. It's gotten a lot of really good use.
Yeah. I just got a new planner too.
Yeah, I had mine in 2020. Didn't get used for like 4 months.
Yeah, well, I buy usually the academic year planner, so they go from summer to summer. And the one that I had for last year, like, just I stopped using it for months. But also my needs for planner changed, because all of my events were virtual. So I got a new one and now I'm using it, and I love it. It helps me stay on top of things. All right. So last question before we close out, what are the last couple of books you read that you really enjoyed?
Oh, so, I already mentioned the Courtney Summers, the project. I can't remember when it comes out now. I think it's fall. I'm going to say October. I might be lying. Don't quote me on that. It might be spring. I don't know. Don't quote me. When it comes out, y'all should get it. I also read, and I really loved, The Year of the Witching by Alexis mm-hmm. Henderson. That's fantastic.
That was a Pitchworth book, right?
Yeah, it was. Ashley worked on that one. Yeah. She did Pitchworth. And yeah, it's fantastic. Oh my God.
It's on my phone. I have it in audiobook. I'm just like, I'm listening to a book now and it's nice.
Great. It is a great, great book. It's a great witchy feminist. Kind of creepy. It's not super, if you're a person who gets super scared, I don't think you'll be too scared.
That's good.
That's some, like, I'm scaredy creepy, cat. There are some creepy images in it, and definitely, like, you can see the horror.
Mm.
You can see the horror elements in it for sure, but I'm a big baby. I like horror in books. I don't like horror on a screen. But then I also read, what's the other one? I also read Mexican Gothic.
So that's another one that I have. Yeah. So tell me, is that scary?
Okay. That one is also a little bit more unnerving, and you're kind of discombobulated. It's very, there are some moments in there where it feels a little trippy because the main character is in this creepy house and all these things are happening. She's having visions and dreams that are really, and there are times it feels very, ooh, but it wasn't, it's definitely more of a slow burn scary. For most of it, you just feel kind of like, what? This feels bad in some way, but you can't really. But it's super atmospheric. And once the things get going, like once you get to the, oh, here it is. It gets super good. So yeah, I highly recommend that.
Yeah, I have that audiobook as well. But I'm also like, I'm kind of scared. I'm a scaredy cat. And so I'm like, I don't know if it's too scary for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So good.
The audio experience, that's the thing I'm not sure about. I'm not an audiobook person. So I don't know how scary it would be to be hearing it. Reading it, yeah. I was like, this is fine. Like, it has that perfect, dreadful feeling. But I don't feel like I don't have to put this book in the freezer. I need to
check the narrator because I'm actually listening to her last book right now, and I'm not a fan of the narrator. So if it's the same narrator, I'm gonna have to find. I'm gonna not listen. To it. But the book is good. Like, and it's weird because like you have to separate like the performance from the book, and you're like, this book is good. It's just like the narrator didn't quite do it justice.
Yeah.
All right. Is there any other book you wanted to mention? And we kind of like, I cut you off a little bit.
No, I think that was it.
Okay, cool.
Great. First three that came to mind. So yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Chelsea. Chelsea's information is available in the description right now. So you can go to her website or check her out on Twitter. I think that's it. Yeah. So hopefully we'll see you next time. Upcoming on Wednesday, we have our regular Wednesday write-in, 7 to 8:30 p.m. And that is with Bess. And then on Saturday, we have Pub Talk Live with Amparo Ortiz and Ashley Hearn are going to be the guests on Saturday. So yeah. So hopefully we'll see you at some of those. Thanks, y'all. Thank y'all for coming. The September Agent Chat Live is going to be Jennifer March Soloway, and that's going to be closer to the middle to end of September. So it's already scheduled, so you can see it on the channel. But if you haven't yet, subscribe and subscribe so you don't miss another thing. So thanks, Chelsea. And
thank you.
I'm just going to put up my Patreon supporter slide, and we'll end the show. So I'll talk to you in a minute. Okay.